This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Other Earth by Jason Siegel and Kirsten Miller. This is the author, Jason Siegel.
Prologue. None of this is happening. I'm standing in the morgue at the company's facility. I should see my own image in the gleaming metal cabinets where they store all the bodies, but I have no reflection. I don't know if I'm real. There are corpses laid out on the autopsy tables, crisp white sheets pulled up to their chins. On the far side of the room are Brian and West, two guys from my high school who were victims of an accident that the company orchestrated. In front of me lies Carol, the soccer mom turned fearless warrior who sacrificed her own life to save mine. Blood seeps through the section of sheet that covers her abdomen. That's where the sword that killed her went in. She thought I was the one who could save the others. All it takes is a look around the morgue to know Carol was tragically wrong. There are at least a dozen bodies here. Most of their faces I don't recognize from the real world. Who knows how many cadavers are tucked away in the morgue's metal drawers? The dead here come in all sizes and shapes and colors. But they all died as guinea pigs, their brains tinkered with and their bodies broken. All to beta test the company's new virtual reality technology. All to debug a goddamn video game. The man who started it all is on the table next to Carol's, Milo Yolkin, the company's boyish CEO and the inventor of Otherworld. Now, he's just another shriveled up corpse. The mine that was hailed as one of the century's greatest turned out to be no match for its own creation. Otherworld may have given Milo everything he'd been missing, but in the end, the game killed him. I pass a computer monitor on my way to the door. I can see the room reflected in its screen, and I'm still not there. I glance at the floor behind me. I don't even cast a shadow. Whatever this is, dream, hallucination, or memory, I know only one thing for certain. Kat's here somewhere, and I have to find her. I don't know who needs to be rescued. Maybe it's her, but it might be me. The panic keeps building. It's pushing me forward. I rush out of the morgue and into the main part of the facility, then skid to a stop. Ahead of me is a wall of boxes with hexagonal windows. These are the life support capsules where the company stores the people whose minds they've imprisoned in Otherworld. It looks like the corporation has expanded its operation since the last time I was here. There must be hundreds of thousands of capsules by now, stacked on top of each other and rising up into the sky. In the center of the wall is an opening, the entrance to a maze. There's a middle-aged man lying on the floor in front of it, blood gushing from a bullet wound in his arm. As I close in on him, I notice that his eyes remain open. The man doesn't see me, but he might not be dead. He works for the company, though I have no idea what he does. All I know is that his name is Wayne Gibson. He's Kat's stepfather, and I was the one who shot him. I step over Wayne's body, resisting the urge to give it a kick, and enter the maze. Walls of stacked capsules tower over me on either side. Inside each capsule is a human being. I glance into one as I pass by and recognize the swollen, purple carcass of a guy my age. The car accident the company arranged for Marlo Holm and his mother must have been brutal. Mrs. Holm's corpse is probably back at the morgue. Somehow Marlo survived. Now they have his mind trapped in Otherworld. I wonder which of the Holmes was the lucky one. I pick up my pace and try not to look into any more of the capsules. The path in front of me keeps branching in different directions. I don't know where I'm going, so I stick to the left. After a while, I start to think the maze might be unsolvable. Every new bit looks the same as the last. I'm about to collapse from exhaustion when I turn a corner and find myself at a juncture. The path ahead has split again, but this time there's a statue blocking the left side. The tall clay man has a Bedouin scarf wrapped around his head and a glowing amulet dangling against his chest. One of his arms is raised, with a finger pointing toward the passage on the right. "It's you," I gasp, The Clay Man is Busara Ugubu's otherworld avatar. I'm so relieved to find her that I almost forget that she can't be trusted. Busara was the one who got me into this mess. She risked my life and others for her own selfish reasons. Still, it's impossible to hate her. If it weren't for Busara's scheming, there's little doubt Kat would already be dead. Busara, I say. If her avatar can hear me, he shows no desire to communicate. Then it dawns on me that the finger may be the only message I need. I choose the path to the right. I try not to think morbid thoughts while I run. I try not to imagine what might be happening to Kat. I try not to envision my life without her. Then, all at once, I find myself at the center of the maze. There's a wide open space here, and it's packed with remarkable beings. Some are giants, others tiny and delicate. A few look almost human, but most can only be described as hideous. No two of them are exactly alike. These are the children, the creations of Otherworld, the digital offspring of parents whose DNA wasn't meant to mix. When they first appeared, Milo tried to get rid of them, until he realized the children were every bit as alive as he was. Above, thousands of captive humans are looking down from the capsules, their faces pressed up against the glass. I came here to find Kat. Now I won't be able to leave without helping them, too. There are now thousands of people, and an entire species, depending on Simon Eaton, fuck-up extraordinaire, to rescue them. And yet no one notices that I'm here. They're all staring at a spot on one of the walls. Somehow I know that whatever is there is what I've been looking for. I weave through the crowd, and when I reach the front, I see guards standing on either side of one of the capsules. Their faces are blandly handsome, their bodies buff, and both of them are armed to the teeth. They look a lot like the non-player characters in Otherworld. No one in the crowd dares to challenge them. It's clear they'll die if they do. The guards can't see me, though. If Kat's in there, this is my chance to save her. As I walk up to the glass, I pray I'm not too late. It's not until I'm standing between the two guards that I realize everything is all wrong. The person inside the capsule isn't Kat. The body doesn't even belong to a female. Lying on the stainless steel shelf is a tall, pasty kid with a giant nose. I suppose I'm still not used to seeing him with no hair. It takes me a moment to recognize myself. I spin around to face the children who are staring straight through me. I see why they're all here. They came for me. I was supposed to help them. But now that they've found me, I'm just a huge disappointment. They're all going to die. I won't be saving anyone.
Why are you so upset?
A man wearing a garish 1960s suit and a brown fedora steps forward. He's the only one here who can see me. It makes sense, I suppose. I'm the only one who ever sees him.
Don't tell me you're surprised, my dead grandfather snorts.
You always said you weren't the one.
I'm about to respond when something whizzes through the air past my ear. I hear an oof and a thud. One of the NPC guards just hit the ground. I'm looking straight at the second guy when an arrow gets him right through the temple. I catch sight of Kat's hair in the crowd. Her camouflage bodysuit leaves the rest of her little more than a blur. Kat! I call out to her, but she must not hear me. She rushes past me to the capsule and yanks open the door. Kat slides out the shelf with my body on top. I stand by and watch as the girl I've loved since I was 8 years old bends over my motionless body.
Simon, she whispers, remember who you are.
I see my body twitch as if it's coming back to life.
Simon, Kat says, it's time. Open your eyes.
I open my eyes. I'm in a hotel room in Texas. Kat is asleep beside me. Badlands. I zip my fly and look up from the weeds I've been watering.
The sun has risen over the hills in the distance, and there's nothing but sand and scrub as far as the eye can see. I could be anywhere. There's no way to tell what century I'm in or what planet I'm on. If I travel back in time, I'd never know the difference. And though I'd rather not think about it, there's a chance I'm being held captive in a capsule somewhere with a disc attached to the back of my skull and my brain imprisoned in a computer-generated world. My eyes detect movement in a patch of dead brush. A scorpion emerges, and I watch it scuttle across the sand toward my shoe. The thing is a monster, at least 6 inches long, but I don't even flinch. My startle reflex has been dialed down to zero. I've seen much worse in recent days. There's one thing that worries me, though. It's the color. I didn't know real-world scorpions came in iridescent green. If I had a phone, I'd look it up. I'm starting to wonder if I'll ever have a phone again. I send the creature flying with a kick and head back toward the car. Cat's there soaking up some early morning sun. The sight of her pulls my thoughts back from the darkness. She's wearing a Budweiser t-shirt and a pair of hot pink jogging pants with the word Diva printed across the butt. She picked up the ensemble at a Walmart in West Virginia, and somehow, she makes it look amazing. Kat's reading a large sheet of paper that's spread out on the hood in front of her. Is that a newspaper? I ask as I approach. I can't even remember the last time I saw a print edition. Nicked it from the hotel before we left, she tells me. Says here there's a pig picking in Darwin next week. And Charlie Jones was arrested for stealing 3 chickens and a pregnant goat. I guess that's what passes for front page news here in Southwest Texas. Nothing about Milo or the company? She looks up from the paper and snorts. Are you kidding? Darwin, Texas, hasn't made it out of the 20th century, she says. A gust of wind sends Kat's copper curls flying. I feel a twinge as she pulls her hair back and twists it into a bun. It suddenly occurs to me that the two of us may be alone. Where's Busara? I ask. Kat folds the newspaper and points to an identical stretch of desert on the other side of the road. There's a tall, dark figure strolling through the brush. From a distance, she looks just like her otherworld avatar. I'm an idiot for never noticing the resemblance. While Busara's communing with nature, I grab Kat and draw her toward me. We've only had a few minutes to ourselves since we sped out of Brockenhurst 2 days ago. We were officially a couple by the time we hit I-95. Being on the run would be so much more fun if we didn't have a chaperone along for the ride. Instead, I've had to make do with furtive kisses. When I slide my hand around the back of Kat's neck, I feel the shaved patch at the base of her skull. Her hair is beginning to grow back in. She wraps her arms around me, and my head spins. I pull her closer, and she loses her balance, sliding off the hood and landing on her injured leg. Aw, man, she groans. Shit, I'm so sorry, Kat. I pick her up and gently put her back on the hood. She tries to smile, but her face is ashen. She says her leg is getting better, but it still can't bear her full weight. She was injured in Otherworld right before we made our escape from the facility, and her real-world body suffered the effects. I've been trying to convince her to see a doctor, but she won't run the risk. I suppose it's a moot point anyway. We don't have the money to pay one. It's okay. I know the pain must be fading when Kat plants a kiss on my lips. Then she gazes over my shoulder at the wasteland I was just contemplating. What were you thinking about out there? You were watching me urinate? I lift an eyebrow. I had no idea you were into that sort of thing. Kat rolls her eyes. I was just making sure you didn't step on a snake. The green scorpion scuttles back through my thoughts. This time, it's my turn to wince. Since I returned from my last trip to Otherworld, I've been having trouble believing that everything I see here is real. This world and the other keep blending together. Maybe it's just my way of avoiding reality. It's still hard for me to accept the fact that less than 2 days ago, I shot my girlfriend's stepfather. And it wasn't in a video game. Do you think Wayne is dead? I ask Kat.
It's the first time either of us have uttered her stepfather's name since we left New Jersey. As I wait for Kat's answer, I realize I honestly don't know what I want it to be.
No, Kat replies with conviction.
How can you be so sure?
Because we're not that lucky.
I was hoping for more of a medical opinion, but Kat's definitely got a point there. Our luck hasn't exactly been stellar. We shouldn't be hanging out on the side of the road. It's time to get going again. The paranoia hits us both, and we look for Busara. She's headed back in our direction, as if the same alarm just went off in her head.
How many miles until we get to New Mexico? Kat asks.
Hard to tell, I say. 300 or 400, maybe? This is the first time I've ever used a fold-up paper map. They don't make it easy to judge distances.
And you're absolutely sure we'll find Elvis when we get there?
I laugh, and remind myself that Kat never had the pleasure of meeting my former boarding school roommate. Oh, that part's going to be easy, I tell her. I doubt we'll be able to miss him. It's illegal for me to be driving. My license was taken away last year after my brush with the law, but the odds of being stopped by a cop here seem pretty slim. We haven't passed a human on the road for at least 2 hours. The only living being I've seen in that time was a monstrous hog standing by the side of the road. I picked up speed to get past it. My companions didn't spot it, and I didn't point it out. The beast's tusks brought back memories I'd rather not share with them. And if I'm being completely honest, I'm not 100% sure it was really there. I've read that feral hogs are a serious problem here in Texas, and I've come across some crazy-ass pictures online, but I always figured that those internet hogzillas were at least 80% Photoshop. I guess I didn't expect the real animals to be so goddamn big. Judging by the size of the thing I saw, it's only a matter of time before the hogs take over. And to think, it probably started with a couple of little pink porkers that escaped from a farm. In the wild, they must have returned to their natural state. Tusks sprouted, snouts lengthened, and fur grew. And there weren't any humans around telling them when to breed. Soon all of Texas was filled with monsters like the one I just saw. The feral hogs are what the clay man called unintended consequences. They're proof that Otherworld isn't the only world that's spun out of control. Kat's napping in the back while Busara sits in the passenger seat, quietly tinkering with two small machines. One's a metal sphere the size of a softball. The other is a banged-up, partially flattened version of an otherwise identical device. I'm watching out of the corner of my eye when Busara hits a spot on the intact sphere. Suddenly, there's a guy wearing workout gear crouching on top of her lap. I yelp, and the car swerves as my head jerks around in his direction.
Yes!
Busara exclaims.
What the hell?
I recognize the guy. It's Marlo Holm, who's probably dead by now. My nerves are already on edge. He's not who I need to see. Thankfully, there's not much to hit on the side of the road. The guy in Busara's lap vanishes, and she's cackling hysterically. I don't think I've seen her bust a gut like this. It's definitely the first time she's laughed since we left New Jersey, or maybe ever.
Oh my God, she gasps when she finally stops.
She marvels at the device in her hands, turning it over and over.
Wasn't that amazing?
Its sensors must tell it how much empty air is surrounding it. The hologram contorts to fit the available space. I'd probably take a lot more pleasure in Busara's holographic experiments if I didn't know what happened to Marlo in real life. I told Busara and Kat where he is. The company has him. I didn't tell them what he looked like the last time I saw him. His entire body was a purple, swollen bruise.
Hey, what's going on?
Kat murmurs sleepily from the back seat. My eyes flick up to the rearview mirror. Kat's sitting up and rubbing her eyes. When her hands fall from her face, my heart skips a beat.
I just figured out how to turn the projector on, Busara says.
That's awesome, Kat says. Now can you figure out how to hack an ATM so we can get some food? I'd kill for a pack of Funyuns. They both laugh. I'm not sure what they find so funny. We had to throw away all our credit cards.
Usara's smartphone is at the bottom of a trash can, too. Everything good about the 21st century leaves a trail. And when you're on the run from a tech corporation, you can't afford to be tracked. So, we're back in the Dark Ages, with $54 in cash, which we'll use to fill up our car with dead dinosaur juice. Meanwhile, we're smuggling some of the most advanced technology on Earth. The projectors on Busara's lap are the first to generate opaque three-dimensional holograms. Tucked away in the glove compartment are a pair of visors and two flesh-colored discs. Slap a disc on the back of your skull and place a visor over your eyes, and you'll be transported to Otherworld, a virtual world you can experience with all five of your senses. In Otherworld, anything you desire can be yours, but the discs are flawed. They'll kill you if you make a wrong move. Dozens of people have already died while the company tries to work out the bugs. Still, flawed or not, humankind has never produced technology like these discs. The ones we have are probably worth billions. The company won't let a pair of them just disappear. If they catch the three of us, there's no doubt we'll be the next to die. Marlo Holmes' hologram reappears on Busara's lap, and this time, I lose it. "Can you stop screwing around with those projectors until we get to Elvis's house?" I bark at her. I sound far more hostile than I'd like. The rage spills out so easily these days. I try to adopt a more civilized tone. "Please, we can't be more than 6 hours away now." The image disappears. Fortunately, Busara isn't easily cowed. Most people find my size and fluctuating levels of insanity intimidating. But Busara doesn't seem to care. "You want me to stop?" she replies. "You think we have an extra 6 hours to spare? You think the company is sitting around twiddling its thumbs and waiting for us to get settled in New Mexico?" She's right. And she knows it. I sit back and wait for her to finish. Unfortunately, she's on a roll. "We haven't seen a news report in over 24 hours. We don't have a clue what's going on. Who knows how the company explained Milo Yolkin's death to the world? They could have pinned the murder on you, Simon. You could be the most famous person in the United States right now, and we'd never even know it. So you want me to stop trying to figure out how to use this projector? 'Cause last I checked, it's our life insurance policy." It's true. The company used one of the projectors to murder four kids back in New Jersey. If we can prove it, we'll have something we can take to the authorities. But that's never going to happen unless we know how the things actually work. "Okay, okay," I groan. "Do whatever you want. Just shut the hell up." "I'm sorry. What did you just—" Busara starts. "Ignore him," Cat advises from the back seat. Simon hasn't eaten more than a Snickers bar in the past 12 hours, and that giant body of his needs regular fuel or it gets hangry. "Hey, whose side are you on?" I ask the girl in the back seat. "Hers," Kat says bluntly. I check her out in the rearview mirror. She winks at me, and I lose the will to fight. I've been in love with Kat since I was 8 years old. I almost lost her once. Now that I have her back, I'm going to do my best not to screw things up. "Besides, Simon," Busara adds. Apparently there's a last word that she needs to have. "You promised me we'd find my father, and for all we know, 6 hours could make all the difference." Once again, Busara is right. The Phantom. I've been staring at the gas gauge for over an hour. The needle is now below empty, and the red light on the dashboard has burned itself onto my retinas. For the last 30 minutes, the three of us have been sitting in silence, focusing all of our energy on keeping the car on the road. Cat crawls up between the two front seats. "You sure there's no way to reactivate this?" she asks Busara, tracing a finger across a blue OnStar button on the rearview mirror. "They could send help if we run out of gas." "If the company didn't get to us first," I point out. Cat huffs with annoyance. "Simon, this is a desert. If we end up stranded out here, the company will be the least of our worries. We have no food, and our water is almost gone." Then maybe we should have stolen a few bottles at the last place like I suggested, I say. And maybe you should have filled up the gas tank. I thought we should keep some money on hand just in case. This argument is pointless, Usara says. Even if we wanted to reactivate the OnStar, we couldn't do it without a phone. And besides, there's a gas station ahead of us. I squint in the bright sunlight that's pouring in through the windshield. Sure enough, there's a sign in the distance. I lean back against the headrest as my whole body relaxes. I feel Kat kiss my ear. Sorry, she whispers. I think I'm getting hangry, too. I pull into the station. You pump, I'll pay, I tell Busara as I roll to a stop. She hands me our last two $20 bills. I'll come in, too, Kat says. No, I tell her. You stay. We need to make this fast. She won't approve of what I'm going to do. I'm not thrilled that I'll soon be adding theft to my long list of crimes, but there's no way in hell I'm going to let us starve to death before we reach New Mexico. I step into the little store and realize it's my lucky day. There's no one behind the counter. I grab a plastic bag and rush down the first of three aisles, filling my bag with anything edible I can see. When I reach the final aisle, I discover I've had company the entire time.
Get enough for the girls, too?
There's an old man standing by the Cheetos. He's got to be at least 85, but he's still a dapper dresser. His sunglasses have amber lenses and thick tortoiseshell frames. They go well with his Brooklyn accent, which is like something out of a Scorsese film. Huh? I reply. An eyebrow rises above the frames of his sunglasses.
You know, I thought you'd be smarter, he says.
I guess I should be offended, but I'm too busy taking him in. There are hipsters who'd kill for the straw hat and guayabera he's rocking, but I doubt they'd try, thanks to the giant gun the guy's got propped against his shoulder. Thinking back to my Call of Duty days, I'd say it's a World War II-era sniper's rifle. Are you from the company? I ask. It seems odd that they'd hire a geriatric assassin with an antique firearm, but you never know.
What?
One corner of his mouth rises in a sneer.
Fuck no. Irene Diamond sent me.
It's so weird to hear a guy his age cursing that I almost miss the name. You mean my mother? That is literally the very last thing I expected him to say.
The fact that Irene Diamond is your mother makes very little difference to me. The fact that she's the Kishka's daughter, that's what's relevant here. You can thank him for saving your ass.
My grandfather has been dead for 40 years. A small-time Brooklyn gangster named the Kishka, on account of his giant nose, he's been at the bottom of the Gowanus Canal since the 1970s. But that doesn't keep him from popping up every once in a while. I wasn't aware that my ass needed saving at this particular juncture. I wonder what the Kishka knows that I don't.
Wait, how did you just... Find you?
The old man shakes his head at my stupidity.
You got the nose, but you didn't get the brains, did you? You ever heard of OnStar? It's a goddamn surveillance system. Your friend's car has been spying on you the whole time you've been gone.
I glance out the front window at the car. It seems perfectly harmless. That's not possible, I argue pointlessly. The service is disabled.
So the hell what? You really think that means they've stopped tracking the car? God, you're an idiot. You've been leaving a trail of digital breadcrumbs behind you. Lucky for you, your mother has a few friends in the law enforcement community. They told her what direction you were heading, and she called me.
Why you? I ask, hoping the question doesn't sound too rude.
I'm familiar with the terrain. Been down here for years. Nobody knows the border like I do.
I think he's telling me he hasn't retired. I wonder what he's been bringing across the border. Drugs? People? Hirachis? Who'd have guessed that my prim, proper mother was buddies with an octogenarian smuggler? Maybe I owe Irene Diamond a bit more respect. So does that mean the company knows where we are too?
Oh, there's no doubt that they do,
says the old guy. My heart picks up speed. Then why haven't they stopped us?
'Cause they wanted to find out where you're going.
He's clearly exasperated with my ignorance.
Why bother killing a few measly rats when there's a chance to set the whole nest on fire?
I feel a bit wobbly. I've been leading them straight to Elvis. What should we do? I ask.
Get your friends in here, the man orders. If there's anything essential in the car, tell them to bring it.
I hesitate.
You got a better idea? He snaps.
I don't, so I lean out the door. Busara's just putting the cat back on the gas tank. Cat, Busara, come here, please. Grab the discs and the projectors, too. Simon? Cat asks. There's a worried look on her face. She knows something's up. The please definitely tipped her off. I've never been known for my manners. Don't worry, I tell her, but please hurry up. A few seconds later, the two of them barge through the door. Cat's limping, with one of her arms slung around Busara's shoulder. What's going on? Busara asks warily. Oh, my God. Cat's eyes have landed on the old man's gun. It's okay, I assure her. Really. I hope to hell I'm right. The man offers the two girls the kind of smile you'd see on the Wikipedia entry for Dirty Old Bastard.
So, which one of these beauties is the girlfriend? He asks.
I point to Cat, and he nods appreciatively.
You may be a bit slow on the uptake, but you're related to the Kishka, no doubt. You got the same taste in ladies.
He reaches out a hand.
Name's Leonard DiIgnato, sweetheart, he says.
Lenny DiIgnato? You're the Phantom? I don't know why I'm asking. I know it's true. There was an entire chapter on him in Gangsters of Carroll Gardens. He was a sharpshooter for the Gallo crime family in Brooklyn, which explains the gun. They say he got his nickname by killing over 36 made men. He shot them all from a distance, so no one ever saw his face. I got to admit, I'm a bit dazzled. That's a little like meeting a movie star. Wow, Kat says. She remembers, too. So you really did know my grandfather?
Yep, he says. He introduced me to my wife. She just happened to be his girlfriend at the time. Never got a chance to make it up to him.
Lenny digs into his pocket and retrieves a large wad of $100 bills.
This means me and the Kishka are even. Now if you'll excuse me.
He walks over to the open window near the register and positions his gun on the ledge. With his sunglasses pushed up on his forehead, he puts his right eye up to the sight. I have no idea what he's trying to hit. The gun seems to be aimed at the sky. What is he doing? Busara whispers. Who the hell is this guy? How do you guys know him? A shot rings out. Before Leonard has time to stand up, an object has fallen from the heavens. Shards of metal and plastic go flying when it hits the ground. Holy shit, it's a drone, Cat gasps, putting words to my fears.
That's how they've been watching you, Lenny says. There's a van a few miles back, and I'm pretty sure they just stepped on the gas. So what do you say we swap keys?
I'm not going to second-guess him at this point. I toss Lenny the keys to Busara's car, and he throws his over to me.
I'm parked behind the station, he tells me. Hold back and let him chase me. Wait until we're long gone before you take off, but whatever happens, don't get on the road again.
I don't understand. What are we supposed to do? Busara asks.
Drive through the desert, Leonard tells us. Nobody who lives around here uses the roads.
After a quick tip of his hat to the ladies, Leonard jogs out to Busara's car, tosses his gun onto the passenger seat, and climbs in behind the wheel. Then he's off. Less than a minute after Lenny peels out of the parking lot, a white van races by. It's got to be going at least 130, but if I were betting, I'd put my money on the Phantom winning the race. We find the vehicle he left parked behind the gas station covered in a beige tarp. I pull it off, revealing a Land Rover painted in desert camo, with a tent tied down to the roof. Bussara cups her hands and peeks in through one of the windows. When she turns back to us, she's practically bubbly. It's got GPS and satellite radio. Lenny's border business must be booming if he's giving vehicles like this away. Is it safe to use stuff like that? Kat asks me. Won't the company be able to track us again? Why would they try? I reply. They think they're already chasing us. But what if they run Lenny off the road? She asks. What if they find out we're not in the car? I'm going to go out on a limb and say your friend Lenny is the kind of guy who doesn't leave home without a plan that covers all contingencies, Bussara says. She looks up at me. How do you know him again? Long story, I say. Great. It's going to be a long drive, Bussara replies as she climbs into the passenger seat. Once we're on the move, Bussara uses the GPS to chart a course through the desert. Then she switches the satellite radio on and searches for a news channel. She finds one, and we listen patiently to reports on the latest scandal to paralyze the government and the riots that have been taking place in Rust Belt cities across the American heartland. It's all big news, of course, but none of it's new. I would have thought the shocking death of Milo Yolkin, the brilliant CEO of the company, the world's most powerful corporation, would have been the top story of the day. But it isn't until the Daily Business Report that we first hear Milo's name. The company announced today that CEO Milo Yolkin will be taking an unforeseen leave of absence from the business he founded over a decade ago. With Yolkin gone, the wide release of his latest project will be shelved indefinitely. A major leap forward in virtual reality, Otherworld was on its way to becoming the most highly anticipated video game of the last 40 years. Now it seems that only a small group of people will be able to claim that they've played it. The company's stock price took a hit following the news. Shares fell by almost 30% yesterday, and the plunge is expected to continue when trading opens today. Meanwhile, the rumor mill has been working overtime as investors speculate about the reason for Yolkin's sudden sabbatical. Theories range from standard burnout to life-threatening illness. Many in the tech community are beginning to wonder what the future of the company might look like without its boy genius. It takes a minute for it all to sink in. The company is lying about Milo Yolkin. They're hiding the fact that the boy genius's sabbatical is going to be permanent. You're sure Milo was dead the last time you saw him? Bussara asks. I'll never forget the sight of Milo's emaciated body lying motionless on a sliding steel tray. It was hard to believe that it had functioned as long as it had. The most brilliant man in America looked like a junkie who'd wasted away. I suppose in the end, that's exactly what he was. But it wasn't drugs that did Milo in. It was his own game that killed him. He got addicted, and then he played until he died. Yeah, I mutter. I'm sure. The company's already suffering. If news got out that Milo was dead, their stock price would totally crash, Kat says. We know something that the company doesn't want the world to know. That means we've got leverage. It also means the company has another reason to kill us, I point out. Everyone in the car goes quiet. There's nothing left to say. The GPS screen says we're making progress, but it's hard to believe we'll ever get anywhere. I've been driving all day across the desert, and I doubt the speedometer has ever passed 30 miles per hour. Turns out you need a road to drive fast. Since night fell, 20 has been my maximum speed. The darkness out here is so dense that the Land Rover's headlights barely cut through it. There's no moon out, but I can see the Milky Way, a purple streak of stars like a scar across the heavens. It reminds me that my own little world is just one of billions. The girls are sleeping in the back. Kat suggested we stop and make camp in the desert, but I didn't think that was wise. I'll keep driving as long as I can. If we're still alive in the morning, I'll let Bussara take over. I knew a guy once who fell asleep behind the wheel on I-95, someone says to my right. I'd recognize the voice anywhere. I look over to find my grandfather sitting in the passenger seat, one wingtip-clad foot propped up on the dashboard. I can't see much of his face in the darkness, but I can make out the silhouette of his giant schnoz. He looks just as real as Marlo Holm, but he's not the product of any projector. He's coming straight from my addled mind.
cop told me they had to use a spatula to get his guts off the road.
This is an I-95, I say. Not much to hit around here.
Still, says the Kishka, you shouldn't be taking risks you don't need to take.
I suppose that's true, but there's no point in pulling over. I'd never be able to fall asleep. I met your friend Lenny, I tell him.
Yeah, I know. How about that? Says the Kishka. Guess I can't hate the bastard for stealing my girl anymore, seeing as how he just rescued the sole heir to my DNA.
Mom arranged the whole thing. The Kishka laughs.
You sound shocked.
I am, I admit. I wasn't aware that she gave a shit. Plus, it doesn't make sense. Why would she risk her law practice? She could be disbarred if they find out she helped me.
You think that makes a difference to her? The Kishka asks.
I have 18 years worth of evidence that suggests I'm not exactly at the top of her priorities list.
You're working with a limited set of data, says the Kishka.
I almost ask what he knows about data when I remember that I'm talking to myself.
And even if you had it all, you'd never be able to predict what Irene's gonna do next.
You're saying Mom is a wild card? I ask with a laugh. My grandfather obviously never witnessed what happens when his fancy-pants daughter discovers the maid left a speck of dust in her house. I think maybe you've been gone too long.
Yeah, well, whatever she's like now, I think it's safe to say she's still human, the Kishka tells me. And if there's one thing I know about humans, it's this. They don't make any sense.
And the minute you start expecting them to,
you end up at the bottom of a canal.
Simon, who are you talking to? It's Bussara in the back seat. I had no idea I was actually speaking out loud. My dead grandfather, I say. I told her all about the Kishka earlier. I neglected to mention that he and I have been chatting on a regular basis. She's quiet for a moment. I think I may have just outed myself as a raving nutcase. Does it help? She asks quietly. Yes, I tell her. Sometimes it does. But this time, I don't feel any better. Maverick. Hey, Simon, wake up. Cat is gently shaking me. I sit up with a jolt when I realize the car has stopped. What's going on? My eyes are having trouble adjusting to the daylight. For all I know, we're surrounded by company men. The GPS says we're here, Bussara tells me. As she comes into focus, I see her leaning forward for a closer look at the screen, as if there's been some mistake. This is where your friend lives? Cat asks me. This isn't even a town. I look out the window, blinking furiously until I can see clearly. Dark Skies, New Mexico, consists of a filling station and a Mexican grocery store that looks to be permanently shut. The carcass of a deer lies by the side of the road. Most of the skeleton has been picked perfectly clean. The horns that jut out of its skull are curved like a pair of parentheses. They don't look like they belong to any North American beast. Whatever it is, the animal has obviously been dead for quite some time. The roadkill crews must not make it to this part of the state very often. I'm pretty sure we're exactly where we need to be. Do you think we should stop at the gas station? Cat wants to know. Maybe they know Elvis. There can't be more than a handful of people who live in the area.
No need for that, I say with an exaggerated yawn. I've already found him.
He lives up there. Ahead of us are bald brown hills. Several domed white structures are perched on top of the tallest. From here, they look like a Star Wars set. I've never seen anything like them, but I know they're what I've been searching for. What I knew we wouldn't be able to miss. I point up at them through the glass. Simon, that's not a house. I'm pretty sure it's an astronomical observatory. Bussara was cool with me talking to my long-dead grandfather, but she's clearly questioning my sanity right now. Nobody lives there. Oh, really? You don't say, I respond, closing my eyes and resting my head against the seat. I'm a wee bit tired of her know-it-all attitude. Why don't we drive up and see if anyone's home? Let me know when we're getting close. Cat, I hear Busara appeal to my lovely girlfriend in the back seat. The two of them have been known to gang up on me, but this time, Cat's on my side. I think we should humor him, she says. Not exactly the most passionate support, but it does the trick. Thanks, I say, smiling as I savor my victory. Busara sighs and shifts the Land Rover into drive. 15 minutes pass before we reach the road that leads up to the observatory. It looks like something that was built for mountain bikes rather than cars. It takes over half an hour to scale the side of what most people would consider a rather insignificant mountain. We're almost to the top when we come to a halt in front of a tall metal gate. A fence festooned with razor wire circles the perimeter of the property. To the left of our car is an intercom with a speaker and a single button. Okay, what now? Busara asks. I can hear the annoyance in her voice. She thinks this is all just a waste of her time. Roll down your window, I say, as if instructing a kindergartner. She gives me the stink eye but complies. Now press the button on the intercom. Simon, be nice, Kat scolds me from the back seat. Scowling, Busara presses the button, and we hear ringing. It goes on for so long that even I am starting to lose hope when the ringing suddenly stops.
Yeah?
The person speaking has his mouth full of something, and he's clearly perturbed that he's had to stop chewing. I'm grinning as I lean over Busara in the driver's seat.
Vidkriti Jopu, I shout into the microphone.
The person on the other side is silent, and then he bursts out laughing, which is quickly followed by the sound of choking. The intercom cuts off, and I'm pretty sure I just killed my friend. Then I hear a buzzer, and I'm relieved to see the gate in front of us begin to open.
What the hell did you just say? Kat asks.
I said open up asshole in Ukrainian. Back at school, those were the passwords to enter our dorm room.
You know Ukrainian? Busara asks.
Just the two most important words, I tell her. Busara shakes her head and pulls past the gates. She drives the rest of the way to the top of the hill and parks in the shadow of the giant domed observatory that I spotted from the town below. I slip out of the passenger seat as Elvis comes bounding down the stairs of a nearby building. It takes me a second to recognize him. He's put on 15 pounds that he badly needed, and his skin is no longer the color of glue.
Whoa, that's Elvis? I hear Kat whisper. Yeah, not what I was expecting at all, Busara agrees, sounding far less robotic than usual.
The car door closes behind me. I don't need to hear what they're saying. I know exactly what they're thinking. Girls have such filthy minds. Maybe I should have given the ladies a heads up that he's handsome. But to be honest, I wasn't sure what to expect. It's been a while, and Elvis wasn't looking so hot the last time I saw him. I doubt the girls would have been so impressed back then unless they liked their men scrawny and scared shitless.
Hello, Simon! Elvis calls as I get out of the car to greet him. I was so choked up to hear your voice that I had to perform the Heimlich on myself. How did you find me?
His accent seems to have thickened a lot in the last 6 months. Hot and foreign? I'm sure the ladies in the car are practically swooning. Remember the last time I saw you? I ask. When you told me you were leaving school, too? I asked you where you were going, and all you'd say was,
where the skies are dark and the land is enchanted.
New Mexico is the land of enchantment, and I knew your parents are both astrophysicists. I just put two and two together. I've been keeping that little tidbit to myself for the past few days. Kat and Busara would have murdered me if they'd found out we were traveling across the country on a hunch. But my answer satisfies Elvis.
You are genius, my friend.
He wraps me up in a giant bear hug and then kisses me repeatedly on both cheeks. Perhaps I have my cold clinical upbringing to thank, but I don't think I'll ever get used to being mauled by an overly affectionate Ukrainian.
Damn, Elvis, I say, finally shoving him away. Give it a rest. You're going to make my girlfriend jealous.
Elvis's eyes widen. The irises are the icy blue of Magna's otherworld cave. I swear, I never would have expected Elvis to morph into a teenage dreamboat. I'm starting to question the wisdom of introducing him to Kat.
She's here,
he asks. I gesture to the car, from which the two girls are now emerging.
Whoa.
Elvis's tongue is practically hanging out of his mouth. I'm getting the sense that he hasn't seen a female in a while.
Which one is she?
Cat's the one with all the hair, I tell him.
Good, he says.
When I realize what he means, I laugh. The other girl is Busara. Go ahead. Give it your best shot, I tell him. But I just spent the last 48 hours with her, and I'm still not convinced she's human. And I know how you feel about robots.
If that girl is a robot, I will reconsider my feelings, Elvis says.
In the year I lived with him, I never knew Elvis to be anything other than angry, sarcastic, and excessively paranoid. But then again, I suppose there wasn't much point in turning on the charm in an all-male environment. Elvis didn't see any reason to shower regularly back then either, which was fine by me. The smell kept unwanted guests away. Everything about the kid was a little bit off, including the fact that his parents had sent him to a prestigious East Coast boarding school without a computer. That particular mystery was solved when Elvis borrowed my laptop. He used it to hack into a toy manufacturer and program millions of toy robots to announce to the world's children that the robot revolution is nigh. It's hard to believe that that antisocial anarchist is this Casanova rushing to greet Cat and Busara. Maybe all the time he spent in our dorm room left him with a debilitating vitamin D deficiency. Or perhaps he was suffering from a rare intestinal disorder brought on by eating nothing but ranch-flavored Doritos and Slim Jims. Elvis is still not exactly what I'd call normal, but now I know he's got at least one thing in common with other 18-year-old males.
Greetings, ladies. Welcome to the Dark Skies Observatory.
The Ukrainian accent is now thick enough to slice.
Hi, Kat says.
She always plays it cool. For her, a pleasant hi means she's practically drooling.
I can't believe we're finally meeting. I've heard so much about you.
And I have heard much more about you,
Elvis assures her, wiggling his eyebrows suggestively. Now that I think of it, I did have a tendency to go on and on about her back then, though I don't remember saying anything that would justify an eyebrow wiggle. I spin around to admire the scenery in the opposite direction, just in case I've turned beet red.
Is this where you live? I hear Busara ask in her usual clinical fashion.
Yes, Elvis replies. I chose it for the magnificent views. At night, you can see for millions of miles. If you like, I will give you a personal tour after dark.
Cat laughs, but when I turn back around, I see Busara hasn't even cracked a smile at the joke.
May I use your internet connection?
No,
says Elvis. He's shaking his handsome head.
No,
Busara repeats. She glances over at me as if hoping I can translate.
There is no internet today, Elvis says. My parents traveled to Albuquerque this weekend to purchase home goods and alcoholic beverages. They took my phone and the router. I am sure they put a stop on the internet service as well.
What? Why?
Busara sounds scandalized.
What if there's an emergency? There's no one around for miles. You could die up here on your own. What if you'd really been choking a few minutes ago?
Oh, I was, Elvis informs her. But a ham sandwich is not what will kill me. I am not so easy to dispose of.
I walk over and join the three of them. I think Elvis's parents are more worried about what might happen to the rest of the world if he goes online while they're away, I say. Most of Elvis's hobbies are classified as felonies.
I have, issues with technology,
Elvis admits with a sheepish shrug.
And the law is so little-minded. I almost got into very big trouble a few months ago. Am I right, Simon?
Oh, yes, I say. Almost. Fortunately for Elvis, it had been convenient for both of us to let me take the fall.
I can't believe the feds still think Simon hacked into that toy company, Kat says. He barely knows how to operate a microwave.
Hey, I object. You know that's not true. I practically live on Hot Pockets. Kat gives me a kiss, but she and Elvis both keep laughing at my expense.
Wait, you're the robot revolution guy? Busara asks Elvis.
He's finally captured her attention.
Yes,
Elvis replies.
That is why I live here now. My mother and father thought it would be smart to leave Massachusetts after the unfortunate incident, and that is also why there is currently no internet service on this mountain.
Do you have running water? Kat asks.
Of course, Elvis says. We are scientists, not barbarians.
Then is it okay if I go in and have a shower?
Please, Elvis says gallantly. In the basement. Knock yourself up.
Usara merely smirks, while Kat doubles over and nearly drops to her knees. Out, I say. The phrase is knock yourself out. Kat wraps an arm around Usara's shoulder. As she limps toward the bathroom, I can still hear her cackling. Elvis watches them, grinning like a village idiot.
You've been in this country since you were 2 years old. Your English is better than mine, I whisper. You said that on purpose.
My accent is gift that brings joy to the world, Elvis replies. Then he drops the act altogether. You won't stop me from having a little fun, will you?
Knock yourself up, I tell him.
Appreciate it, bro,
he says in a comically American accent. Then he punches me in the arm for good measure.
Come on, let me show you around.
I can't stop thinking that this place is right out of Otherworld. I wish I could. The thought is more than a little unnerving. 5 buildings form the observatory's compound. All are painted a blinding white. I feel like I've wandered into a futuristic Greek myth. 4 of the buildings house telescopes of various sizes, their giant unblinking eyes trained on the sky. The 5th, I'm told, is the residence. From the parking lot, it looked like a simple box-like structure. Seen from the side, however, it's something else altogether. Only half of it is anchored to the mountain. The rest juts out into the air. It reminds me of a diving board, or the plank on a pirate ship.
You and your parents are the only people who live up here? I ask. Aren't there visiting professors or scientists or anything?
No, says Elvis. Most observatories are run by universities, but this one is private. My parents were hired to oversee it.
Someone actually owns all of this? I ask. Who buys a...
Elvis holds his hand up to stop me.
I don't want to keep any secrets from you, he says dramatically. So please, don't ask. I've already caused enough trouble for my parents. I promise that while you'd find the answer entertaining, knowing who the owner is wouldn't do you much good.
I'm composing a mental list of possible suspects as Elvis leads me up to a metal platform situated on the highest point on the mountain. We have an almost 360-degree view from where we're standing. The land below is barren, aside from a few mangy pine trees, and the Dark Skies gas station is just a speck in the distance. There's a single paved road that cuts through the dirt. Nothing seems to be moving for hundreds of miles. It's like the rest of the world has been put on pause. I feel safe for the moment, though I probably shouldn't. I scan the sky for signs of drones. One could be hiding up there behind one of the puffy white clouds, and I'd probably never see it. Then, my heart skips a beat when what I assumed were 3 black rocks suddenly lift off the ground.
Hey, Simon, you okay? Elvis asks.
I have to clear my throat before I can answer. Do you see those? I point at the objects, which are flying our way. I don't know what will scare me more, if Elvis says they're drones or if he doesn't see them at all. He's studying my face. I do my best to look sane.
Of course, they're birds, he says.
I'm relieved. You sure? I ask. They're close enough now so I can make out the wings, but they seem unnaturally large.
Yeah, they're turkey vultures, Elvis tells me. Ugliest things you've ever seen.
Right, I say. Though he's wrong, I have seen far uglier things. I try to shake off the uneasiness by changing the subject. What's it like living out here in the middle of nowhere? Elvis takes the hint and lets me change the subject.
If you're asking if I miss school, then the answer is, hell no!
But it does get pretty boring, especially when I'm offline. I had a project that was keeping me busy, but I had to give it up. What was the project? I ask. Elvis grins.
See, now there's an answer that might prove very useful for you. But before we get to it, let's talk about you first.
You must be in deep shit if you drove all the way out here, he says casually. He doesn't seem particularly worried. Does it have something to do with Otherworld?
My head instantly swivels in his direction. My reaction must give the truth away.